It's an honor to introduce our next speaker. Not only is she a wonderful person and a good friend, she's my sponsor. And I'd like to introduce Frances J.
I'm a name Frances, I'm an addict.
Hey, Frances.
And, oh, microphone check. I felt like rapping. Well, let me say, I said I was an addict, but I want to say one thing before I begin to share my story, right? When they asked me to do youth in recovery, I was like, why y'all asking me to do that? I'm not a youth no more. But when I started on this journey, I was real young. And I can remember, I'm going to tell you my story because that's all I can do. And hopefully my story will give you an insight on why they asked me to do this workshop. When I started on this journey, I was I started using probably around the age of 9, 10. I was in New York City, right? I had an aunt. And she lived in New York, and I used to go up New York every summer. And the young lady that lived across the hall from my aunt, she was like a big sister image. And she was in a gang. So every Friday night, they had to go and fight on another side of the city, and she'd take me with her. So I went with her to the gang fights, and she said, well, you go stand up in the apartment building. And she put a crate by the window, and she let me stand up there and watch them fight. So, you know, a person like me who had really no certain type of image that I wanted to be when I grew up, I wanted to be a gang member. You know, okay, I could try that. I'll be a gang member. What the heck? West Side. You know what I'm saying? Whatever. Whatever it takes, right? But I'm going to go back a little bit further. When I was a little girl about the age of 9, right after I come back from New York, I found my mother dead when I came home from school. So I was stuck at 9 years old for the last 19 years. And I didn't realize how many images I picked up along my journey. So when I was in New York, you know, when you're hanging with gang members, they do certain things. They smoke marijuana, so they thought it was funny to give me the marijuana to smoke. So I tried to smoke the marijuana. You know, I cough. I obliged their humor, you know. But when I got back to D.C. and I found my mother dead, my family was a family that kind of shifted me from one place to the next. I lived with an aunt one time, a cousin one time, and in all these households, they had different images. So in my cousin's household, she had a household where they had like 4 kids, a husband that whipped her, and stuff like that. And that wasn't an image that I wanted to that's not for me. So what I did was, I remembered the marijuana incident in New York, so I took dry leaves and rolled them in paper bags because it smelled like marijuana. Smoke that. Y'all smell that, don't you? But I was a real angry kid, had a bad attitude. I would do things like, we down in the laundry room, all of us playing in the laundry room over in Southeast Washington. And I can remember this little kid kept messing with me. And I got a thing where I'm gonna get you. So I said, come here, man. Come here, let me holler at you for a minute. And this was, you know, to bait him in. Because we bait people in. So I said, I bet you that dry ain't hot. He said, It is hot. I was like, no, it's not. Come here. So I said, let me see your arm for a minute. And I took this little boy arm and I pushed it on the dryer in the back where the flames at. And it took all the skin off his arm. Gave him about second degree, you know, burns. That's all. So I can remember, you know, my father coming to get me from that household. He kidnapped me, took me to California. When I was in California, I was like, Daddy, you gonna take me back? You know, I really liked my cousins. I really liked, they was a pretty dysfunctional family. I liked them. But I really didn't know what functional was, so it really didn't matter. So he took me to California to introduce me, by the way, to his new family. His wife knew nothing about me, so I was about to go through hell. She had four sons. These were my brothers. We get to California, and I'm a person that has personality. People like me for some odd reason. Had to try to pick up different images so I could become whoever you needed me to become at that time. So I'm in California. My cousin don't like me. She think I'm taking all her friends away. So what she does is, you know, I don't like my cousin. Come on, and she takes her friends and she goes away. But some of her friends kind of, you know, gravitated towards me. So it's a battle of the friendship thing. So I just wanted to get back to D.C. where I felt at home. Now, mind you, nowhere that I had laid my head since I was 9 did I feel like I was at home. So what I did was, I said, when she come to D.C. to visit, I'm going to get her. She got to pay for treating me like a piece of shit in New York. I mean, in California. So she came. We having family outings. I said, you know what? And we grown now, but I never let it go. So we joking, and I'm a jokester. I can make people laugh pretty good sometimes. But I had, when you don't let go of things, you kind of keep them in a crawl space, in a little box, hidden in your soul. So I said, I made her the joke of the family out. I said, yeah, I remember how you treated me in New York. I mean, in California, right? She was like, what you talking about? And I proceeded to eat her ass up for what it was worth. And then after that, just recently I found out that my cousin was the one that told my other family members that I was locked up and I was pregnant. The same cousin that I ate up, you know, she was the one that told my family that I needed some help. So when I see her again, I have to really make amends to her. You know what I mean? But we since then got past that, and I told her I loved her and I was sorry and all that good stuff. But after my father took me into the house that Jack built with his four sons and his wife that didn't like me, all hell broke loose. My father and his wife started to fight constantly. He would stay away from the house. He was an alcoholic that never admitted it. And they used to fight. My father was the kind of person that would run out the house butt naked to get at her. And I had never seen stuff like this, except for in New York on a crate. But this was supposed to be a family setting. I thought I'd finally arrive when I got me a family. Well, when my father was out gambling and drinking, his wife was working the midnight shift at the hospital. My brothers really didn't like me, so they made a boxing ring in the living room. And I had to fight each one of them. You know, and these were supposed to be my family members. So y'all already know I had a low kind of thought on family. And I always thought that if God ever gave me a family, I would never treat them the way these people were treating me. My brothers were also the first ones that molested me because they thought I was so cute, my good brothers. Well, after that, my father finally left that house, and he eventually had to come and take me, and I moved in with him, and one of the other brothers left because his wife couldn't take them no more. And I went to a senior high school called Dunbar in D.C., but we went to Catholic school the whole time. But mind you, I was still angry. I went to Catholic school till I was in the 12th grade till they put me out. In the Catholic school, it was a exchange students. We were on Capitol Hill, you know. In Catholic school, I was kind of reintroduced to marijuana. I was reintroduced to gambling. I was introduced to people being gay. I went to an all-girls school. And I was the captain of the cheerleaders. I was who's who among all American cheerleaders in the day. You know what I'm saying? I was an honor roll student. But I had to use something because I had to go back into the house that Jack built with my father, mind you. We had moved out. And I started learning about one thing about Catholic school, you can get a lot of information, right? We had people from all walks of life. They knew about acid. They knew about marijuana. They knew about all kinds of stuff. They knew about stealing. And everything that these people showed me, I kind of took to it. And what it did was it changed my mood. It made me be able to deal when I went back home. My father started to be abusive because, remind you, he no longer had his wife to beat on, so I became the new subject. My father smacked me so hard till he bust my eardrum. And I stood up, stood to my father because I got a hell of an image, and I'm angry. I stood to my father and I said, well, what it says in the Bible is that if you smack somebody on one side, you need to oblige them and smack them on the other. So you might as well, you know, smack me on the other side. And he obliged me and smacked the shit out of me, right? And from that day on, it was another house that Jack built. So I took 60 extra strip Tylenols, cough syrup, and I laid down because I really wanted to die. I didn't want to be abused. And I kind of hated my father. But this was the only parent I had left. From there, I moved in uptown with my grandmother. And uptown in D.C. is where all the happenings at, right? All the happenings. So I went to college. I had 4 scholarship offers. I never took them because of the fear of succeeding. The fear of just being somebody and the fear of failure had me stuck. I said, if I go away to college, they're not going to send me no money. They're going to just leave me there. They're going to pay the tuition, and I'm going to go hungry. But it actually was, I was really scared to succeed. So I didn't take the scholarship offers. I went to UDC. I paid, my grandma paid my tuition because I had, the day after I turned 18, I left my father's house. Because I was taking acid and drinking at the time. And I used to do, and when I went to, they put me out of the Catholic school, by the way, because I smacked the girl in the face with a can and, you know, with the cigarette butts and smushed them all in her face. And that wasn't the kind of stuff that they did in Catholic school. Then I got cut, I got caught on the bus smoking marijuana. And I lied and told the lady that, we were smoking a cigarette, and this was the assistant principal, right? So they put me out. So I went to a public school uptown, Dunbar, senior high school, and that's when I, you know, had to go see a psychiatrist because I was kind of losing it. But in the time, I was taking acid, a lot of acid, because acid really, really changed my mood. I don't know if y'all old enough to remember this, but back in the day, they had a movie out called The Shining. Not The Shining. Dang, what's the name of the movie? Where they used to look at people can blow their heads up, right? So I was taking acid, and I was sitting on the bus, and I was asking the people, I say, y'all see that? Look at my hands, right? Because I think I was illusioning my hands, the things was coming up, my head was about to blow up, right? So when I got home, my father had taken and went through my pocketbook and found all the little roaches in my pocketbook of all the marijuana I'd smoked. And I said, that's not mine. I let somebody use my pocketbook, and they must have put that in there when I got it. I don't know. And then I proceeded to ask him, why are you searching through my shit anyway? So he said, if I couldn't listen to what he said, get out. I said, yeah, all right. I'm going to go to my grandmother's house. So I went to my grandmother's house. My grandmother today, y'all, is 99 years old and doing swell, has all her senses. And I went to her house to live, and I slept on the couch a lot of nights. And then I really got into using. My friends were good friends. They introduced me to cocaine, right? And it was like a social thing. I introduced the kids at college to that because I couldn't do it by myself. I was a cheerleader in college, and I had people that wanted to try stuff. So I said, come on, y'all, let's try this. They gave this to me on the block. And I had the cheerleaders snorting coke, smoking weed, and everything, you know. And then some of them just was like, we're really not with that. I said, all right, then fine. To each his own. But the ones that did it with me, you know, we thought we were having fun. So I lived on 14th and W at the time because my cousin, she moved back down to 14th and W. And I left my grandmom's house and went to my cousin's house, right? I'm on the block of life, okay? And back in the day, 14th and W, yeah, you know what I'm saying? The bling bling and all that y'all talk about, they were living the life. And I had my cheerleading uniform on a lot of days, and I walked through the block, and you know how the little guys holler at you? Hey, who that? And I was like, ugh, whatever. And I walk, and I come back home, and I walk, and I come back home. But mind you, I was introduced to cocaine and go-go's. I became a real popular person in D.C. They used to call me Go-Go Frank. And what the people really didn't realize was I wasn't dancing because I could dance like that. I was dancing to my feelings. Because when I went to the go-go's and I smoked marijuana and Love Boat and whatever else they gave me, I changed my mood because I knew I had to go to another house that Jack built. I became real popular, got real high, and then my friends, like I was talking about, introduced me to cocaine. First it was just, you know, little sniffs here and there. Then we started... They started going places, and I wanted to go with them because I wanted to be like them. You know, because, mind you, I never really knew who I was. I always picked up other people's images. So then when I got this real popular thing going on, and they introduced me to new strips, 9th Street and 7th Street and things like that, and the brothers on the strips was like real popular. They had a lot of money. They had cars. I ain't have none of that. And but I still was acting like a little uppity because I was a college student. Then I noticed that my mood had started to change. I would go to class. I was a radiology major. I would go to class. And I'm really, really not good with lectures, right? Mind you, I go to go-go to 3 o'clock in the morning. I done been high all night. I go home, try to get a few hours of sleep. And I was the kind of student that could remember stuff. So once I read it in the morning, I'm like, okay, I got it. I'm going to class to take this test. I get in class and I nod, slam out. So what my teacher did was he said, he watched me for a couple of weeks. Every time I got to class and it was a lecture, I fell asleep. So one day he took the little ruler, you know, the pointer, and slammed the desk, bam, and I popped up, and he said, could you please stop falling asleep in my class? I said, could you please stop being so goddamn boring? You know? So he put me out of class. So it was all right with me because I got tired of going to school. The streets were becoming real, real, you know, it was just attraction. It was a lot of fun. I was popular in the go-go. I was walking down the street, and now I no longer just walk by those guys that were hauling anymore. I was stopping and conversating. I had a good conversations with these people, you know, and one thing led to another, and my girlfriend got introduced to crack. But back then, we didn't smoke crack. We freebased. You know what I mean? And there is a difference, you know? So we were freebasing. She told me, come here, I want you to try something. I learned something new. So I tried. I said, all right. But the first time, you know how the devil is. First time you try anything, it's just all right. It's not really that good. Well, what happened was I started to like this thing a little bit more. A lot more. I didn't go to school anymore. I held about 8 jobs in a year, you know, because when I came in the morning, I was like losing it. You know what I'm saying? And then this pamphlet, I was reading the pamphlet. I said, why'd he tell me to do youth and recovery? So I went and got the pamphlet. Mind you, my clean date is January the 15th, 1986. I'm clean 19 years. And what it talks about in part one of this pamphlet is hitting the bottom. At the end of my addiction, I was facing 18 years in district court and 8 to 24 in superior court. I had gun charges, dope charges, cocaine charges, ammunition charges, all kinds of charges. How I got there, I had no clue. I sat in the cells, and I was 77 pounds at the end of my addiction. My grandmother spent $10,000 for me to go to a treatment center in Pennsylvania where I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. And this was like in 1985. This is when I first was introduced to any kind of program. Now, mind you, I'm in the hills of Pennsylvania. They fed me good and everything. This is before I got to the jail. They fed me good and everything. I started picking up my weight. A team of doctors stood around my bed in Georgetown University and said they were studying me because they didn't understand how anybody could abuse themselves this way. I was 77 pounds, and in my car, I still have the picture that the jump out squad took of me. And he's in the picture, he said, because if you ever get your life together, then you're going to be a beautiful young lady. Mind you, in the picture, I'm standing like this, I'm 77 pounds with handcuffs on. I got a couple of sets of clothes on because I was just that skinny. So I get to the jail. I'm going to get to the jail part. At the end of my addiction, like I said, I was facing 18 years in district court. I had 2 co-defendants. See, remind you, in all of this, I never knew who I was. So I picked up a lot of images from the streets. And I became a hustler. I became a pimp when I felt like selling somebody else to get drugs. I became a whore when I needed to. I became a whole bunch of things. And through all that process, I forgot who I was. I get to the jails, and I learned a lot of things in the penitentiaries. A lot of the people that came through when I was coming through are still here today, and a lot of them are not. From there, I thank God they sent me to a program up in Denver, Colorado, named Stout Street. I hated that program. They made us work in Estes Park, where they made the Shining at. I learned construction. I learned how to cook. I learned a lot of things in this program. I also had my best pimp ability in this program. I had the girls from D.C. having sex with the guys from, the guys in D.C. having sex with the girls from New Mexico and in Denver. But mind you, I'm still angry. So one of the dumb girls get a passion mark on her neck. I ain't like this girl. So I said, I can get the passion mark off your neck. And I heated up the iron. And what I did was, I said, come here. She said, what you gonna do with that? I said, just turn your head. Don't make no noise, because you know if the counselors come up here, we're gonna get in trouble. And I burned that passion mark off her neck. It probably could have been toothpaste, alcohol, or some other kind of thing, but I just thought the iron was sufficient. But I'm angry. So I go to groups and they try to tell me. I said, all I really want to know how to do is to stop using. Can y'all tell me that? I just want to know how not to get this 18 years back if I get put out of this program. Because what this Judge Richter told me was, if you come back in my courtroom, he said, matter of fact, don't bring her back. Send her straight to Alderson, West Virginia. Don't bring her back. But what the program did was they made a mistake. And at 4 o'clock in the morning, after I'd acted out several different times, they put me out at 4 o'clock in the morning. When they put me out at 4 o'clock in the morning, they took me to the airport. So I went to Chicago. But prior to leaving that program, I had a little discovery, right? They told me that I was pregnant. Because I couldn't understand why, right? I said, how'd I get pregnant? You know what I'm saying? I only had sex one time since I've been home. And then I had a little sex in the program, of course. You know how we do. I couldn't let them get it all, so I did some too. So for real, they put me out of the program. I went to Chicago, and I met this white young lady named Vicky. She said, if they put you out too, just come to Chicago. I got you. And she had a picture with her in with a Rolls Royce. So I really didn't know how Vicky was living, but it looked good to me. So I went to Chicago, and I called my lawyer and told him, can you please tell me what I need to do next? Because I'm not in the program anymore. He said, what you need to do is come in. I said, if I don't come in, what they gonna do? He said, well, you're gonna get the 18 years back in district court. You're gonna get the 8 to 24 in superior court. And they're gonna give you an additional 5 for absconding or escaping from the program. I said, I ain't escaped. They put me out. He said, I don't care. So I got on a plane and went back to D.C., and while I was on the plane, it was a guy sitting next to me. I used to like to read dirty magazines. I had a dirty magazine, and he had an Elton John tape. I said, I'll let you look at this if you let me listen to that. He let me listen to the tape, and on the tape it had, Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me. He got a funny way of giving you a message when you're really not listening. And I listened to this tape all the way back to D.C. Well, at the end of this, I get back to D.C. and I got back in front of the judge and they sent me back to court and I got the time. But for some odd reason, God kind of intervened again. They took one of the 4-12s away and gave me 1 4-12. And in district court, because my co-defendants told on me and left the court and all that, they tried me by myself, but they only gave me 1-3. But they ran them concurrent, whatever that means at that time, because all I heard was I was going back to jail. So I went back, and at the process of me doing this, they give me a program. I got second Genesis. But mind you, I had my daughter when I was in the penitentiary. And she's sitting here today 17 years later, right? And I'm going to try to speed this up really, really quickly. I get to second Genesis. I have my child, and I started on the process of recovery. And I've been clean ever since. But in my story, my fourth year clean, I sold narcotics. My ninth year clean, I sold narcotics. And my 15th year clean, I was facing 30 to life. And I also went to a mental institution at the process because I couldn't believe that I had maimed and disfigured a person for coming in my house. In the laws in D.C., they say that you don't own the property outside your house. Let me break that up. I lived to use and used to live. Now, I'm going to give you a message of hope. I've been clean 19 years, and these last 2 years have been the most beneficial time in my life. For the first time in my life, I'm not as angry. For the first time in my life, I don't have a desire to sell narcotics. For the first time in my life, the voice that I thought I had in my life are no longer there. Because what I had to do was replace my void with a God of my understanding. I thank God for God because through all I've been through, in and out of recovery, I'm still clean. People have died as a result of me selling narcotics in this program. People have died as a result of me thinking that this new way of life couldn't work for me. God has always intervened and saved my life. So I know without a shadow of a doubt that he kept me clean for a purpose. There's a prayer called the Prayer of St. Francis. I went to church and prayed. I said, God, all I want to do is be a servant. Any way you can use me, use me. I have sponsees today in the fellowship. I help them. They help me because some days I can be really, I run. I got a lot of service position because it is my duty to give it back like it was so freely given to me. The message of hope is this. No matter what you go through, no matter what, just don't use because a new day is coming. There is light at the end of a tunnel. A lot of time people talk about how they relapse and they, and stuff like that. Call your sponsor before you relapse and you might have a chance not to use. What we do is we make the mistake of using and then calling them. You know what I'm saying? So my message today is for anybody that's young in recovery. When I came in here, I was young too. And I tried everything. But I'm still here. Almost 20 years later. So no matter what, just give God a chance, and whatever you do, please, please keep coming back. Thanks for letting me share.